Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Gaming Careers Podcast. It's been a couple of weeks, actually. We had a week's break last week, which means more news than ever for us this week. And good to see so many people in chat, as we always do. I feel like this is even more than we've had at the start of most streams. But anyway, I'll first grab the attention of my co-host, Ben. How you doing, mate?
Good, man. It's Monday. We got a shorter week here in the US because another holiday coming up with summer holidays. But I got to the beach, got a little bit tan, so not too bad, man. How you doing today?
Yeah, there's been some sunshine here, although today it's like absolutely pouring it down with rain, but definitely enjoyed some sunshine last week whilst we had our break. But there's so much news coming out. I feel like the title of this video and the title of this live stream is all around the creator splits that these different platforms have. And it's one way that, I guess, smaller platforms like Facebook are trying to incentivize streamers to come across. But it's not just, we're not just talking about Twitch and Facebook. We're even going to throw Twitter into the ring because they've announced some news this week. But should we dive straight in with this news from Facebook? I feel like it was maybe about 10 days ago now, but obviously we haven't done a podcast since then. So if we, let's swap over to the shared screen. And if you want to introduce this one about what Facebook has announced.
Sure. Yeah. So this came out, like Pete said, a couple of weeks ago, I think now, but it's pretty big news. And that is that Facebook has announced that through 2023, maybe the end of 2023, they're going to take basically 0% of the subscriptions from their creators, from the revenue, which is a pretty big deal, especially considering that Twitch takes half of every sub on the platform right now. With Facebook trying to essentially compete with Twitch and other platforms, this is a really big difference because it just essentially doubles your revenue overnight with that small change, or maybe not so small in Facebook's favor. But I think it's kind of crazy to see this come out. And I guess it's really just a testament to how competitive they want Facebook to be. I don't know. I was pretty surprised. Pete, you have thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it was surprising. It was I feel like it was kind of announced in the middle of this massive ongoing debate between Facebook and Apple, really, about how much of a charge Apple takes, 30% through the App Store. So maybe it was like a little dig, and this might not be a huge amount of money that Facebook is taking anyway from live streamers, but it's cool that they're passing on the benefits directly to the streamers. There's actually a tweet here, or it's not a tweet, it's a screenshot from Mark Zuckerberg's Facebook profile, which I guess is where he shares like all news, but basically saying the exact same thing, that they're not going to be taking any money through 2023. It actually says until 2023. So I wonder if that's just till the end of 2022 or not. But he even promises that after that, it will be less than the 30% that Apple and others take. So even promising after 2023 that it's going to be less than platforms like Twitch and even YouTube, which is 70-30. But I think in general, it's a great incentive to get people onto the platform. But are you actually going to make more money by moving across to Facebook, where people are spending less money than they are on Twitch? Because we've spoken so many times on this podcast previously about how the culture on Twitch is so supportive of creators. Like, people are used to subscribing and donating bits, and that's more difficult to see across on platforms like YouTube and Facebook, where it's not grown sort of with the platform. So whether you're actually going to see more money, but it's one of those things. If you can move across to Facebook and take half the subscriptions, then you're making the same amount of money, aren't you? So you only need to do better than half if you want to move across the platforms. But yeah, it's big news. At the end of the day, we are constantly asking Twitch to I guess, rethink their 50-50 split. And as days go by and more announcements like this and more platforms coming up, it's becoming a worse deal for streamers to start streaming on Twitch, because right off the bat, you're giving 50% away. And that's just of subscriptions. You know, you're getting a really poor cut when it comes to ads. And then you've got tax to pay on top of that. Like, you're not being particularly well supported, even though your fans are, you know, thinking that they're giving you the full $5. You're seeing less than $2.50, unless you're a really big streamer and you get to renegotiate that contract. But I feel like 99% of the people aren't in that position. So, yeah, I mean, really interesting. Do you think it's going to make a difference to new streamers or current streamers moving across?
I think, yeah, we'll kind of have to see. I'd be curious if there's anyone in chat who does Facebook streaming, because I haven't used it a lot. As we've talked about on the show before, Pete and I are probably the least experienced on Facebook streaming. But I think it's pretty big because it probably makes people want to subscribe more too. If you know that your full donation essentially with subscription is going to the creator, then it's more exciting to give that to the creator versus like Twitch. If you know that half of that just goes to Twitch, you might want to use a different method or some other way to monetize, because you don't really want to give Twitch that money. So I'm curious to see if we'll see more subscriptions overall on the platform. I do think an important note is that it's not for all monetization, I don't think. So they said fan subscriptions, badges, news products, and online events. But I guess that doesn't include like ad revenue and that kind of stuff. So they're still going to take a bigger cut for that, I would assume. I actually don't know the Facebook split on that off the top of my head. But still, I mean, that's huge because, like you said, it's essentially doubling your income overnight if you assume the same number of subs from one platform to the other. Probably not really the case because, again, there's probably more of a culture around that on Twitch than Facebook right now. I also think that Facebook is kind of tailored to different audiences almost than Twitch. I think it's really big on mobile and especially overseas streaming from what we've seen with some of the data. But, I mean, it's pretty enticing. And I've seen people talk about moving to Facebook with this change coming out.
It's interesting you bring up it being big on mobile, Facebook streaming, because one of the caveats of this is only subscriptions made through desktop that they're wavering the fee. Because through mobile, through platforms like iOS, iPhone, they have to give some of that money to Apple. Like it's part of Apple's terms of being in the App Store. And that's what the whole fallout between Epic Games and Apple is about, basically. Like subscriptions in-app, they're still taking a cut off. So it's been promised through desktop, but if it's a big platform through mobile, then you obviously have to take that into account. I think realistically, it's not going to be a huge shift of people, but the more things like this that can come up, the more people are questioning the 50-50 split. And to be honest, there's loads of bad things in the Twitch contract, the whole exclusivity thing. Like if they're really secure about their platform, they probably wouldn't have to write these terms into their contract that they get you on when you have, you know, three concurrent viewers at affiliate. So the more it gets talked about, the better. What I will say is if Twitch was a new upcoming competing platform, they would never get away with 50-50 split, would they? You can't possibly entice new users across to your platform with a 50-50 split. So it is good that it's moving in the right direction. And I guess if Twitch does at some point eventually update to a better default split from the start, or even like a tiered system, kind of like they do behind the scenes, where if you're a really big streamer, you can negotiate a 70-30 split. Mm-hmm. Then maybe that's going to be the case. They'll never go backwards on it, at least. But I like the pressure. I like people holding the pressure on Twitch and saying this is such a free win in publicity. Like if Twitch is getting all this bad rep for all of this news that's coming out about, you know, hot tub streamers, and I know we're going to cover ASMR in a little bit as well. But what a free win that would be if they just upped the split. Even if they upped it to 60-40, I feel like that's just free publicity and people would be really hyped. But at the same time, if they're not seeing a decline in users and people leaving the platform to go elsewhere and partners cancelling their contracts to stream elsewhere, then why would they? They're effectively just going to be losing money.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, they're still, like you said, losing money from doing that. And I don't think there's really a lot of pressure for them to do it yet. If this really does pull people to Facebook or other platforms, because really, I would say almost any platform besides Twitch has a higher revenue cut for the creator at this point. If that does start to pull into their user, and I think more importantly, their streamer base, then they'll probably have to reduce that cut to stay competitive. But as it is right now, Twitch is kind of the king in this area, so they can kind of set the level and then it's up to their competition to undercut them essentially. So until that changes, I don't really see Twitch changing it unless they really need to. But Amazon's still behind the company, so don't think that's happening anytime soon.
Yeah, that's true. What about Twitter then? Have you seen this news? Let's go back to the screen share because I've got a tweet from Twitter Media talking about ticketed spaces and super follows. I think probably the more interesting thing to look at here is the blog post. But two new monetization options through Twitter. Have you looked at these? Which one do you want to cover? I'll do one, you do the other.
Sure. Yeah, I think the first one was the super follows.
Yeah, super follows. I'll scroll down to that. You go for that one.
Great term. So I'm reading through here. If you have it pulled up, because I can't see what you have pulled on the screen, if you just want to go through it really quick.
Yeah, I have it up. Super follows effectively, I think, is like the Patreon support. You can put some certain content behind a paywall. And I think down here they say $2.99, $4.99, or $9.99 is their opening testing to see how that works. And you as a Twitter user can put certain content behind that and only release it to super followers, I guess they would be called. Your audience that wants to support you in the work that you're doing. So this isn't the same as directly supporting somebody through Twitter like we saw before, where you can just make a donation. This will be a reoccurring subscription almost, where you can pay for certain levels of content. Now, I'd be interested, is Twitter going to be able to put live video behind these subscription prices and how will that look? I don't necessarily think there's going to be a big platform for live, but this is certainly an interesting part. But I think probably the more interesting half was the ticketed spaces. So spaces are Twitter's version of Clubhouse, and it seems like every single platform has developed a Clubhouse feature. We've actually got another one to talk about in this pod, but Twitter's version is called Spaces, and it's like audio where you can join and listen to somebody that you follow live, and they can invite people up on stage. Ticketed Spaces is just the premium model of that, where you can set an audience, I think up to 1,000 people. Is that, oh no, up to 100 people, it says here. And you can choose how much to charge for somebody to come and listen to your talk or whatever it is. I don't know how high quality the audio is. Again, I don't see this working right now. I can't ever imagine like paying $5 to go and sit and listen to somebody in Twitter, or maybe I don't follow interesting enough people. But if they build live video into this and you can run, you know, a live show or some, you know, you can watch your favorite bands play live or something like that, I can see that being like the ticketed events. But right now I can't really imagine it, but the features are being built. So is Twitter ever going to be competing in the live market versus platforms like Twitch and YouTube? It certainly seems like they're building a lot of the infrastructure that platforms like Twitch have been building to support creators in the background. So I don't know. I'm kind of interested about it, but at the same time, I can't ever see myself using it at the moment.
Yeah, I think so. The ticketed spaces thing is interesting because I didn't realize it was the audio, just like Clubhouse, which again is weird. I haven't used Clubhouse. I don't know if anybody here has. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. But again, having that as like a paid ticketed offering is kind of interesting. The funny part to me is that you can charge as high as $1,000 per ticket for this live audio event, which seems crazy. I don't know what you'd have to do to justify $1,000 price tag for a Twitter audio stream.
I actually don't want to know, Ben, with all the ASMR stuff. I don't want to know.
I don't either, but it's really interesting. And I guess, I mean, if all these platforms are doing it, because Discord had theirs, we're going to talk about Spotify in a minute and Twitter now, there's got to be some value behind it, because these brands would not be going out of their way to develop these platforms if there was not demand for them. So I guess there must be a lot more demand for Clubhouse than I'm realizing, and I need to try to explore it a little bit more. The super follows, though, are pretty interesting to me, because I do think I could see people using this. I don't know that I'd ever pay for a super follow, maybe. But some, kind of like we talked about before, there's some accounts on Twitter that do news stuff or are just really high quality tweets that I could see people paying for, like exclusive access for, or some sort of special first access to that kind of thing. Or if you just want to support the creator who has a lot of good stuff, that's kind of what we talked about before with some of the like the donation stuff built in the profile. I could see some of that, because some of that stuff doesn't really have another platform. Like I know some people who are really big on Twitter, whose tweets get a lot of activity, who don't really have the same reception on Twitch or YouTube, because people kind of just want the short blurb and not like a full stream of content. So I could see this getting used more on that side. And I don't think it would compete with Twitch per se, but sort of be like another avenue for gaming content creation in that space. I don't know. You have thoughts there?
Yeah, I'm always interested whenever a new feature like this comes out. I'm always thinking from the user's perspective. So why would a user want to pay for this? Like, what would be the best case scenario? And I'm always skeptical of things like this where I can just see, you know, the Jake Pauls of the world charging $100 so you can hang out with him for 15 minutes with 100 other people and listen to his audio. Like there's going to be people that abuse this, and I hope that doesn't take the limelight, because there are probably some real genuine use cases for this that would be amazing and even I would support. But I am skeptical until I see it done properly, which is probably not a bad thing in this world. But I personally don't see Twitter coming into the live stream argument, really, with the three horse race that we have now, where it's Twitch, YouTube and Facebook. Really, I don't see Twitter entering that unless, you know, we really see improvements in their live streaming platform as a whole and being able to discover new streams and things like that. I think we probably
did we cover the split on the creator? I think that's pretty important to talk about. That stuff too. So basically on the whole topic of revenue splits for this stuff that Twitter's having, it's going to be 97% revenue to the creator, so almost 100% for the first 50K, and then it drops down a little bit more after that, like 80% or something, which is a really interesting model. They have like a limit that you get to and then you lose some of that. It's kind of the opposite of Twitch, where like you get a certain amount and then you get a better commission. So it's just interesting to me, but it's a pretty good revenue split if you want to get into this kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's up to 50K in lifetime earnings. So unfortunately, not like per month or per year or anything like, like that. But I think probably if you've made 50K on Twitter spaces tickets or super follows, you're probably doing something right, and you can go down to 80% of your earnings. Let's move on to talking about the Twitch emote updates, because I know that was the focus of our last live stream. I think it was the main headline, but some of the features have rolled out, and I thought I would take some people through the dashboard if they haven't seen it. Not everything has rolled out. What hasn't rolled out? The follower emotes. I think it's only on the Twitch official channel right now, but the animated emotes have come up. So if you come into your emote dashboard from the Twitch page, you can click to either upload an emote that you've made already, and there's been quite a lot of demand for a Gaming Careers video about how to animate an emote, so it's definitely in my, you know, scripts to be written folder. I'm not the best animation artist, but thankfully in my time of growing this channel, I've been able to meet a lot of people that are good. So I can definitely collaborate with somebody or get a lot of expertise from emote artists and things like that. But the easy option for people like me, I'm not going to include you in that, Ben, because I don't know what your artistic skills are like, is that you can upload an existing emote and then animate it through Twitch. They've got like five or six different emote animation options. So if I upload one of my emotes, let's go with Gammy Yikes, since that seems to be my audience's most favorite. My face highly oversaturated, which I think was from a webcam comparison video or something like that. Somebody screenshotted it and it just became a bit of a meme, especially in the Discord server. You can now choose a few different animation types for a static emote, and then it will become an animated GIF, which I think is a really great idea by Twitch. And it takes a few seconds to do. I'm imagining this shake one, let's go with that first, will be pretty scary. But you can see, yeah, instantly sort of creates an emote that you can then add to your Twitch channel or download for Discord and things like that. And it gives you even some previews of light mode and dark mode on Twitch. Let's just do one more rave. This could be pretty scary, I think. This is the one where it changes color, Ben.
Yeah.
It's processing for a few seconds. There you go. I mean, that is the stuff of nightmares there. That might be against terms of service. This might have to be an 18 plus stream with things like that. That is absolutely terrifying.
The red eyes and everything. Yeah, this is cool. I think, just to clarify, I think it's just for partners right now that it's rolled out, but I think all partners have it now, which is cool. And I tested this out too, and it's pretty nice. If you don't have like an animated emote you can get yet, or just want to get something up quickly, then the pre-made tool is pretty good. And I think I've used five already on the partner channel I work with. And they're better than I thought they would be for this tool. It's really easy to plug in and just drag and drop around as you need to, just using existing stuff, and then people can use it right away. So I'm pretty excited for this one. I will say I haven't really seen animated emotes take off on Twitch, like specifically the built-in ones. People are still using BTTV and everything else, but I haven't seen a lot of pre-built, like actual channel specific emotes being used a lot. I don't know, Pete, have you?
I think that's going to take time, isn't it? Because people that are constantly sat on Twitch probably have BTTV or Frank's Face extensions already installed, so they're kind of used to animated emotes already. But there are, you know, plenty of people discovering Twitch today or in the last month that haven't heard of those extensions. You know, they're not particularly well documented. It's not like you see them if you haven't got them installed. So we're probably going to see the rollout slowly start to occur more on Twitch, and you're going to see more animated emotes that are actually supported by Twitch rather than needing an extension. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, I kind of need to change screen because this thing is catching my eyes. So let's move on to the next topic. The third topic of every podcast that we do seems to be DMCA related. So let's jump into what we've seen from the DMCA world, which is that NMPA, and I feel like I should know what that stands for. Let's bring this up here. It's National Music Publishers Association. They have filed, they shared some information that they were going to be really ramping up their push for DMCA takedown requests of people using music on Twitch. And it seems to have kicked into, you know, fifth gear straight away, with loads of streamers instantly being sent DMCA takedown requests for music. And when you see who requested the takedown, it says NMPA. So yeah, this isn't surprising. We talk about it every single week, it feels like. You can't be using copyrighted material or music that you don't have the rights to use on stream anymore. Like, everybody knows about it now. Please stop doing it. But you still see big, big streamers getting hit by these strikes and like complaining about it on Twitter. And I'm like, how do you not know at this point that this is the case? Twitch is now a well-known website. The music industry knows about it. They have tools that are scanning your live stream and scanning your VODs. Just don't use it and delete everything that you did use it on.
I don't want to beat this horse to death. We've talked about it so many times, but it's crazy to see just how many strikes are coming out now, because it seems like there was a little bit of a lull, or at least less talking about it on social, and now there's a lot more coming out, it seems. So once again, make sure you're using everything that's safe. I think it's also interesting that the NMPA also sued Roblox for $200 million for some of the music that was in the game, which is interesting. I don't play any Roblox, but one of the first times I've seen DMCA go after a game specifically for that kind of thing. I think probably because it's so sandboxy and so people probably use their own music in the game. Just kind of crazy to see how serious they're taking this. And they've said that they're going to war essentially with Twitch at this point. So I don't know what that's going to mean for the next months. But as we always say, just make sure you're using the safe music when you're on the stream.
I mean, I've said this so many times, but it's just going to take a big streamer being banned off the platform, being an example made of them, for it really to stick with a lot of streamers, I feel like. And right now, I don't think we've really seen that. There's been a couple of examples of people that have been, you know, banned for a few days, but not actually removed from the platform. And Twitch, the hands are kind of tied. You know, they have, if they want to be in this safe harbor legislation, they have to. Oh, that's my dog banging on my door. I think his tail wagging. They have to take part of this. They have to basically follow the rules of giving three strikes, and then if you're still abusing it, then they have to give you a ban. So it's kind of out of Twitch's hand, but until we see a big streamer, you know, getting taken down from the platform, I feel like people are going to keep streaming with music, which is a real shame, because it could happen to you. And there's plenty of good royalty-free music out there. I've made countless videos and Twitter threads about it, so hopefully keep spreading that information to as many people as you can, to really educate them about this. But yeah, DMCA, it always comes up in every single podcast, and I feel like those letters need to be tattooed on my body somewhere because of the amount of times that I've said those four letters.
Yep. I mean, like you said, it just can take somebody big. And I think we talked about this before, but there's so many big streamers who still just use any music they want to, which I just can't believe, when your career is built on this kind of thing, that you would take that chance. But I guess that's what's happening here. I mean, we also had, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say it was the same as what happened on YouTube all those years ago. Yeah. And now everybody follows the rules on YouTube because there's no other option. But yeah, go on, introduce the next one. What do you want to hit?
Yeah, so we talked about this a little bit earlier, or teased it, but we also had some news come out from Spotify, which is that they're also building a Clubhouse competitor, and that's called Green Room, which I think launched a week or two ago. But yeah, I mean, basically the same concept as Clubhouse, where you can tune into some live audio streams with people. I don't know if there's a paid option. I don't think I saw one right now on like the Twitter variant of that. But I guess they're really trying to take over the audio world. I will say it makes a lot of sense for Spotify, because they've really pushed on podcasts in the past year or two. And I think the Clubhouse type thing is the natural extension of that. So I think it makes sense. I haven't tried this yet. I don't know if I've seen anybody use it as far as I know. So maybe it's not fully rolled out yet. But again, if people keep making these platforms, if these brands keep making this service, there's got to be demand for it. So I'm curious to see how it gets used in the future.
Yeah, I mean, it must, like you say, it must be worth developing, because I'm similar to you. I've never used Clubhouse, and being a content creator, I definitely should do the research and, you know, jump into these apps when they get released. But we now have, like, pretty much every platform has copied this Clubhouse feature now. Like, Discord has, even, and now Spotify has. And this is Spotify's first take on, like, a social platform, really. Like, beforehand, you could like follow certain podcasts, but it wasn't like you could interact with the hosts or, you know, anything like that. And this, effectively, what they've done is they bought a platform called Locker Room, which was for sports live podcasts, basically, and they've reskinned it and put it in. So it's not too different right now. But I've listened to one show on it, but I didn't actually listen to it in the app. I still listen through my podcast player, when it wasn't live. So it was the recording from it, and it was really bad quality. Like, it was notably worse quality than their previous shows, which they didn't record using Spotify Green Room. So I don't know if that was just a bug or like a user error of not setting it up properly, but I would hope that the quality is, you know, on par with what you get from a normal podcast. But there must be value in this. There absolutely must be, because all of these platforms have built this feature now, and they wouldn't build it if it wasn't valuable. But it's kind of dipping your toe into live, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, is Spotify going to be a platform where you can live stream in the future? It feels like a real stretch because it's an audio platform, but this is, I guess, their little entry into it, where you can host a live show, invite people up on stage and interact with a live audience. So really interesting. I know it's not really live stream related, but we can't ignore the fact that pretty much every platform out there, like Facebook and Discord and Spotify, have copied what Clubhouse does. You know, Instagram as well, I think, have done it now. It must be a big feature. And, you know, maybe we should do one of these shows on Spotify Green Room, so at least we understand the pros and cons of it. But we'll save that for the Twitter super followers and charge them $999 to tune into this podcast for an hour.
That's what I was just thinking. We got to try this sometime. I mean, because I'm curious, there are so many platforms now. Could you like multi-stream to audio-only platforms where you're hitting Twitter and Discord and Spotify and Clubhouse all at the same time? And I mean, are there exclusivity clauses? I don't know.
If there isn't a way of multi-streaming right now, then that's a business idea for anybody that can do some coding, or a platform like Restream should be building that, because there's enough platforms now that you probably do want to multi-stream to them so you can try and get as much of an audience as you can. But I don't know if one exists. Maybe anyone in chat that has used one of these features might know a little bit more.
I don't know. Have you tried the Discord one by the way? No, I've tried it just a little bit.
I've listened into one, but I haven't been on, you know, I haven't chaired one or been invited up on stage or whatever the terminology Discord uses to do one. What was the experience like?
I mean, it was cool. I think I was missing video the whole time we were doing it, because I just kind of wished I could show something like a regular live stream. But I guess the appeal is that it's more casual sort of with just audio. It seems like it has potential, and I like how Discord will promote it. So like if you're doing an audience stream, it'll show a special server icon and you can show up. They have a whole stage discovery thing now. I don't know if we even talked about that on the platform, I mean, on the podcast, but they have a whole section of Discord where you can just browse stage channels that are live right now. So again, they clearly want to push that on Discord, and it kind of makes sense that other companies are doing the same thing now. But I feel like I still haven't seen any show that's consistently putting out broadcasts on this kind of thing that I would tune into or anything there. So it still feels like it's pretty early for that kind of thing.
We could definitely do that. I think that's within the realms of possibility to live stream this podcast in Discord, obviously without the visual element, whilst we're doing it on YouTube. And see if we can bring in new audience members, because the Gaming Careers Discord is pretty popular. And like you say, if it shows a different icon, maybe we're going to get some people jump in, and then we at least get to test and talk about the feature a bit more. So let's make a note of that, and we'll do it in the future at some point.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you can actually pair it with a live stream. Like you could run a live Twitch show as well as running the Discord thing and have people come on the show via audio that way. So I think you can actually do both. It doesn't have to be one or the other, which is kind of interesting too.
Well, we're just waiting for Twitch to introduce the audio only feature, Clubhouse ripoff. But
it's coming.
It is. Yeah. It probably is coming. Talking about Twitch, and I have to be careful about what thumbnails I show from this news article here. Let's talk about the hot topic from last week, really, which was the move from hot tub streams over to ASMR. Or ASMR and yoga, I imagine it eventually became. But we can talk about it with an interesting perspective, which was what it did to the category as a whole. Because there's a graphic here on the on this article that I've got linked, where it shows pools, hot tubs, and beaches as the 35th most watched category. And these smart streamers, they're still bending the rules in their favor. Rightly or wrongly, wrongly in this case because they got banned, but they moved across to the ASMR section and were doing, you know, some pretty suggestive, I think is the word that we can use, ASMR streams. And they both got 3-day bans. This is the two biggest hot tub streamers previously, both got 3-day bans and basically told that this wasn't acceptable to be streaming on Twitch. This kind of stuff, I never know if we should cover it on the podcast or not, but it is what is being talked about in the Twitch community and on places like Twitter. So I think we should at least cover it and, you know, say our piece, whether we think it's right or wrong or just what's interesting about it. But I think what is clear here is that Twitch's terms of service are going to become hopefully bulletproof within a year's time, because streamers are trying to find any loophole or any way that they can, you know, get past this pools, hot tubs and beaches category into just chatting or like making any content suggestive. And at least Twitch is now sort of ruling with a bit more of an iron fist. I don't know if it's necessarily an iron fist or a paper fist, or it's somewhere in between those two things, but they're starting to make some kind of rules and say what is and isn't acceptable. So clearly the category, the pools, hot tubs and beaches category, just didn't have the viewership. And that's why these streamers have moved category.
Yeah, I mean, it's the bigger category. So like you said, they made that custom category for that kind of stuff. And then it seems like as soon as that happened, the streamers who were using it moved to other categories because of that, which is kind of interesting. And I was actually surprised to see the bans come out, because people have been talking about that for months, I think, even before they moved to the ASMR stuff. And it was the first time I saw a lot of bigger streamers kind of speak out about it and say they think it's wrong, or not even necessarily like the streamer's fault, but Twitch need to do something about it and make a stand about it. So I think that's kind of why this happened eventually. Like, I saw Ludwig make a video about it, and then once he kind of did that, I saw other streamers start speaking up once they kind of felt able to. So I think that's probably why it happened. And it was just a 3-day ban for everyone involved. So I think they're already back to streaming, kind of like a slap on the wrist. But interesting that Twitch kind of set this as the line, and versus like the hot tubs stuff, they didn't really have a problem with it. It's kind of interesting to see what the difference is between those two.
Yeah, I mean, I guess their thought with the hot tubs side of things is that they don't want to discourage streamers that are creating legitimate content in a swimming pool. I don't know, an Olympic swimmer wants to start streaming on Twitch, they don't want to have to enforce strict rules on them. Whereas this ASMR stuff, I think, is a little, there's probably not professionals coming in and licking ears in ASMR. So they have at least banned streamers for this. But yeah, there's a lot of calls from the community that the bans weren't long enough, and it's not the first time they've broken the rules and things like that. One thing for sure is that these rules are going to keep getting skirted around until people know what is and isn't allowed. And this isn't new. We've said it before. It happened years ago with body paint streams and things like that. Was it considered art, or was it just, you know, sexually suggestive? But what I just think it's interesting that the pools, hot tubs and beaches category, just moving from just chatting to that, killed that whole niche. Like, it, the viewership wasn't there and they needed to think of something else. So I guess categorization is actually a big thing on Twitch. If you can get to the top in one category, then it needs to be the right category to still blow up. But yeah, probably covered that enough. I think let's move on to some new Twitch features that might be launching soon. Our favorite Twitter account, Zach Bussey, has found a few different images of some tests that Twitch is running to try and make cheers, I guess, better incentives for people to cheer. So the first one we see here is that the person was able to attach an image with a cheer. The second one is that you could get larger text in text chat if you cheered, and the third was sort of raining bit emotes if you cheered. So three different ways that Twitch, I guess, is testing to see if they can incentivize people to cheer for streamers more. What do you think about these? Any of these take your fancy? Do you think they'll implement any or all of them?
They're really interesting, and I think it kind of reminds me of Mixer to an extent, the way that you used to have like stickers and things going on in the Mixer chat that are much more custom. So I think that's probably where the inspiration comes from, and obviously just wanting to incentivize bits and more money on Twitch's side. But I think they're cool features for the most part. The images one is the one that seems like it has the most questions around it, because like, how do users decide which images that they can post? Do the viewers upload an image, or does the streamer kind of pre-approve a list? How does that work? And like, are they GIFs? Are they super distracting? I think we'll kind of have to wait to see how the rollout for that is. This image they've shared is kind of strange, but it could be cool if you can set like a certain threshold for it and there's a good use case for it. The R2, I think the bigger text and the little celebration bits, those are pretty harmless for the most part, I'd say. So I think it's cool to have more options like that if you want to do that as a streamer or a viewer. But yeah, the images is the one that I'm really curious to see kind of how the structure behind that works.
Yeah,
in the future.
It's got to be the one that they've got to get the policing of it right. Otherwise, it's going to be abused. And I'm already thinking of like the images that, you know, those images that can be seen in two different ways where like people are like, do you see a vase or do you see two people kissing? It's like a black and white image. People are going to find ways to like get an image through the system that is, you know, I don't know, yep. something abusive. I just feel like it's a risky one, and that's going to require a lot of coding on the back end, whereas bigger size text that has like some gradient or raining bits, like there's literally no way you could abuse that. So as long as your message that you're writing in bigger size text also gets through the normal chat moderation, right, then it's going to be fine. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. I'm glad that they do test these things out and see what the community response to them is. And yeah, obviously like the abuse cases as well. But I quite like them. I think they need to incentivize bits more because they are such a small portion, I feel like, of a majority of streamers' income. Now, is that because Twitch is taking too much of a portion, to link this back to the topic of the pod? Or is it just that you get way more benefits for subscribing to a streamer that bits are kind of by the wayside?
Yeah, and I think it's going to be more exciting to be able to use bits essentially for the viewer side if you have these options, especially like the images one seems like the most dangerous, but also the potential most upside for this if there's some really funny images you can use, or if users can like nominate images to get added to this kind of thing. There's a lot of potential for that. So I think that seems like the biggest of the features. But overall, I think it's good to see more options like this. I think somebody in chat said it's kind of a small change, which is true. Like, we're getting a lot of small little bits from Twitch, not like big features overall for the platform. But over time, these kind of add up. So at least we're getting some viewer experience upgrades for people.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, it's worth covering because hopefully it's going to make an impact to streamers' income. You know, whenever Twitch or any platform makes a change that hopefully incentivizes your audience to support you in some way. And you might think like, well, who's gonna support me just because they can write text in bigger font? But you'd be surprised that like a lot of people that do end up supporting want to be able to reach out to you or have your message noticed or something like that. And this is definitely going to help that. Talking about platforms building in more monetization features, let's move on to one of our last topics today, which is Instagram adding a new affiliate tool to the platform. So you might have seen some adverts before where you can tag products in Instagram posts, but they seem to have built this affiliate tool out so that more users can now use it. I don't know technically how it's going to work, because Instagram must have to agree affiliate, you know, rates with a store, but effectively they're building out a way for users, for content creators, to be able to earn money by tagging products in their posts, which is going to be super useful because a lot of people were relying on stories and swipe up to be able to do ad spots for companies and things like that. But if you can now actually tag products, either your own or a company that you're working with, in your posts, then that's definitely going to help make Instagram more profitable as a platform for people. It's already like, I remember seeing some stats from like a year ago where the influencer spend on Instagram is pretty large. It's like right up there. And I know that a lot of that won't be gaming creators or live streamers, and it'll be more beauty focused. But as live stream platforms start to accept way more forms of live content, and we see more beauty creators and cooks and people start to live stream their content, this is definitely worth covering, isn't it? So I don't think either of us have a particularly large amount of following on Instagram, so go and drop us both a follow over there. I think our tags are just below our names. But this would be useful for, genuinely would be useful for me, because it allows me to add this to, you know, any brand pack that I sent out to somebody that wants to work with me, saying that, you know, I can post a picture of a relevant product and tag it, and then users can directly go through to the shop if they want to buy it.
Yeah, I think this is pretty cool, especially that it's native and built into Instagram directly. So you don't have to go make your own custom tracking link and all that nonsense to try and get your thing set up. You can hopefully just like search for the product that you want to promote, essentially, if you just happen to have something, and then create an affiliate link just like that, which I think is super nice. I would be a little concerned if this gets used by a ton of people, although I guess it's probably limited to certain accounts that have the feature. Hopefully it doesn't turn into like every post on Instagram starts having like a featured product that's in it or something, because you figure why not? And then it kind of feels like Facebook, where the whole platform becomes ads at some point.
Yeah, it could, but that's a good point. It could genuinely kill the platform. Like, they often say that social platforms are like really cool for 2 years whilst they're native and like the user base is really strong, and then people in marketing from big companies find out that this platform is cool and they end up ruining it by, you know, selling stuff on the platform. So that's a good concern to have, I think, Ben. Like, is it going to turn into everybody tagging Elgato in their Stream Deck pictures of their streaming setup?
Yeah,
you know, just because they can earn 10% of a sale or something like that. It could, right. It could ruin it.
It's kind of like, why not? Like, if I would say most pictures you're going to take, there's going to be some product in the picture, right? Whether it's like a t-shirt or a piece of gear or something. And so people might just think, well, I may as well put an affiliate link in there and maybe get some commission. And then suddenly every post in the platform has a link on it, and people kind of get sick of seeing ads for products, even if they're not direct ads. So that seems like a kind of an extreme scenario to me. I would think this is probably just gated for certain accounts, and most people probably won't use it, but you never know. We'll kind of have to see how it rolls out. I also think it might come to Facebook, but I'm not totally sure. And they might already have something like that on there.
I think the parity between Facebook and Instagram, now that they're both owned by Facebook, is pretty close. So I wouldn't be surprised if this was already implemented on Facebook as well. Let's move on to the Gaming Careers video from last week now. So if you haven't seen this yet, it's actually done pretty well. It was 5 steps to improve your microphone quality. You know, making use of some genuine positioning of a microphone and how you should speak into a microphone and position it, how far away it should be, getting it off your desk, things like that, as well as 3 plugins that, or 3 filters that were already built into OBS Studio and Streamlabs OBS, and then 1 VST plugin to actually equalize your voice. It's been something I've been wanting to make for so long, because I did a video probably 3 years ago about making your microphone sound better using OBS's filters, and I have learned so much about audio since then that when I watched back that video, I was like, God, there's so much misinformation in this. Like, well, not misinformation, but just now that my understanding of like a microphone chain, and also the variety of different microphone setups that people have, those recommendations weren't always the best from that video, but the video was doing really well. So people were still arriving at this video 3 years on. And I was like, I can't have this be my main microphone guide that's out now. So I wanted to redo it. You know, I followed a lot of advice from people that I know in the industry and could get advice on, you know, what makes sense for a majority of different microphone setups. Because I know that some people are just going to copy the settings in this video. No matter how many times I say it, depends on your microphone, your voice, your environment. People are just going to copy my settings like verbatim. So I wanted to make sure that I built something really safe and, you know, quite natural sounding as well. But it's done really well. It came out last week. It's already at nearly 70,000 views. So if people haven't seen that yet, then definitely do follow it. Ben, did you catch it? Any questions? What did I miss? Any feedback?
Yeah, it was really good. I saw it. And there's a lot of love in the chat for that. So nice work on the video. Also the thumbnail, I saw people calling out specifically. That was pretty cool. One question I saw from people was whether it works in Streamlabs OBS 2, or if it's just for the Reaper plugin specifically. Did you confirm that for Streamlabs?
Yeah. So one of my community manager, Atreya, sort of posted that to me this morning, saying that there was a few people in the Gaming Careers Discord saying they couldn't get it working in Streamlabs OBS. But I tested it this morning and it worked fine for me. So I don't know if that's a bug necessarily for people with Streamlabs OBS that needs to get reported to the Streamlabs team. And I don't really know where people are falling apart if they can't find the VST plugins, or if they can't find the option to add the Reaper ones. For me, it was the exact same process that I taught in this video for OBS Studio. So yeah, didn't have any issues with that particularly. But if people are having issues with Streamlabs OBS and the Reaper EQ plugin, then let Streamlabs know, because it's definitely something on their end, because I haven't heard anything about it not working in OBS Studio. And I'll pass on your thanks to the thumbnail to Nathan from Nerd or Die, because he does most of the thumbnails now for the Gaming Careers channel. And, you know, he's 5 times as good as me, and it takes him 5 times less time than it does for me to create a good thumbnail. So yeah, I appreciate all the kind comments that we had on that. And lots of good comments in the chat of people saying that they enjoyed that one. We should probably get a question from chat actually to cover this week. I don't know if you've managed to pick anything out so far. I didn't want to spring that on you, but if anyone has a comment or a question that they want us to cover this week, then do let us know in the chat, and we'll make sure we cover it I'll ask you in the meantime, whilst we're waiting for a comment, what your current microphone setup is, because if I remember rightly, you're not using like a Go XLR. It's an expensive microphone through a variety of different loops and leads.
I probably need an upgrade, to be honest. I have a very weird setup because I like to use my guitar along with my microphone. So I have two mixers. I have a Zenix 802 USB, which has my mic and my guitar go into it. That goes into a smaller Zenix 302 mixer, and then that goes to my streaming PC. So basically, I could really make it a lot easier by just getting a Go XLR. The only thing is they're expensive, and also I don't know how the guitar input would work with that. So I probably have to play around with that. But really, all the EQ that I do is directly on the boards. I don't really do any Reaper stuff for this. I just do a little bit of like noise suppression or noise gate kind of stuff. I don't know. Do you use any actual digital EQ on yours, or is it all through Go XLR essentially?
Digital
too.
Yeah, it's all done on the Go XLR, so it's hardware. Yeah, I think it's using the DSP, technically. I do use a Go XLR, but I've tested various different setups, more so just to get an understanding of what like the Rodecaster Pro is like. I've used that a little bit. I've used the Focusrite 2i4, I think, which is really just a cheap USB interface. And then with microphones like this, sometimes you need a cloud lifter, sometimes you don't. So it's a constantly changing microphone chain. And something I really want to do actually on the podcast a lot more is test new microphones, and you know, not be so concerned myself about my microphone sounding as good as it possibly can, because I actually think it would be more useful for people to be able to reference a certain podcast and hear an hour-long conversation using a microphone. You know, so before deciding if they want to buy a certain microphone, they could hear a really long conversation using that microphone and hopefully make that decision better, because I think that's the best process. I always want to be trying to help users as much as possible, and if I'm just sat here with, I'm still getting sent microphones, so it'd be quite an interesting test. Anyway, we've had some questions, so let's go on to a couple of questions that we've seen come up in the chat. I'll take the first one. Have you guys used TikTok, and if you have, what's the best way to grow on there? Oh gosh, Ben, have you used TikTok? Have you downloaded the app?
I have downloaded TikTok and I have explored it. I have not created a TikTok yet. I don't know if you have, Pete, but I'm starting to see the appeal of TikTok and the whole, I forget what gen it is now. It's on TikTok, but it really does appeal to the younger audience, I think. I'm just amazed by it. Like, I have some family members who are just obsessed with TikTok. That's all they look at. So I see the reason you should be on there. And I kind of, my feeling on how to grow on there though is something I've always thought about platforms in general is, you shouldn't necessarily see TikTok as a way to grow your Twitch. I think there's a lot of value in just growing a presence there and growing a presence across multiple social media, not like defining yourself as a Twitch streamer who uses TikTok to grow the Twitch stream. Does that make sense? Like, yeah. I think there's value in creating a brand on all three platforms or any platform that you're on, really.
Yeah, totally. And the only experience I have with TikTok, because I mean, me and Ben are both boomers nowadays, aren't we, really? Considered... over 30. I'm over 30. You over 30, Ben? I don't actually know that.
You keeping that? 27.
You're 27.
Yes.
You look more like an adult than I do. I'm still dressed like a teenager. Anyway, the only real TikTok experience I have is for my 5 bad tips to avoid. I can't remember what it was. It was like 2 videos ago where I cover 5 bits of bad advice that I've seen plastered across the internet, and somebody said to me, like, you've got to check out TikTok. There's so much bad advice on there. So I literally went on, searched like small streamers or Twitch streamers or Twitch tips, things like that, found as many little bits of bad advice as possible. But yeah, I agree. I think it's one of the video platforms that you should consider being on. I think in that video I say you should concentrate on one video platform and one other platform to go alongside your stream. So for me, that would be YouTube would be my video platform, and maybe Twitter would be my non-video platform. Some people might be TikTok and Instagram, or TikTok and Snapchat, or something like that. But I do think that it's a legitimate video platform where you can build a real following. Like, people have blown up there that you can't see that same growth on YouTube. They really, it does seem like the algorithm is designed in a different way almost, where it can be viral. But for me, and creating long form like tutorials, I don't think it's the right platform for me, but I can certainly see the appeal of people wanting to create, you know, short, quick, easy to digest content. The one thing I'm jealous of actually is the fact that you don't have to create a thumbnail. How amazing is that? Or maybe you do, but it's nowhere near as important because people just are swiping up I guess, through the app, and the next video just instantly plays. Whereas I have to always think about the thumbnail, and it's like the bane of any YouTuber's life is having to create a clickable thumbnail and title combo. So I am jealous of that one aspect. Have you managed to pick out another question? Or I see that we've had a couple of super chats. Actually, just people praising us, I think, saying you're awesome. Thank you for making awesome content. Lots of love from India. So thanks very much, Richis Live. Hopefully I haven't butchered that name. And I think we had one earlier as well. Let me scroll up. From Sean Poggers as well. Thank you very much for the super chats. Have you got another question?
Yeah, I like that last name, by the way. There's a question for you, which was, let me find it. Yeah, so a lot of the game creators videos are based on common issues and common PC setups. Do you have any plans on doing a series on more advanced setups? So things like multiple people streaming from the same room. That's from Slongy and Stu, who I guess are two people.
I for the longest time, I've wanted to do a video on a dual streaming PC setup, and I actually have two PCs, so I can definitely make that. But I feel like with the MVenc encoder, like how popular that's become, the video has become less relevant. But that doesn't necessarily mean that I shouldn't create it. If there's still a user base of people wanting more advanced streaming setups, like dual PC streams, multiple people streaming from the same room, I guess that's like multiple cameras or something like that going into a single stream. There's definitely a lot of hardware coming out that's come out in the last year that really wants to take advantage of multiple inputs, things like the Elgato Cam Link Pro, I think they called it, the one with four HDMI inputs, really designed for multiple different cameras. And then you've got like the Blackmagic 8M Mini and that whole range of HDMI switches effectively. So yes, I do want to create more advanced videos for those that want, really sweet setups, but I have to balance it with also what other people want and what I can teach. So if there is enough interest in a dual PC streaming or like more advanced streaming setup, I also need to do a studio tour at some point. That's just reminded me that I do need to show off my new studio. But I can definitely start to create more content around that. I hopefully people have been enjoying the more frequent content I've been able to put out the past month and a half or so. The last three videos have done super well, which is really easy to motivate yourself when things are going well like that. So I'm glad to hear that you enjoy the content and that there's a demand for, I guess, more advanced content out there. I'm conscious of the time, Ben. I see that we've been going for a little while now. So I think probably let's wrap this one up before we hit that hour mark. We've had a crazy number of viewers. We've definitely set the viewership record for this podcast on this live stream. So thanks so much for everybody that's joined us and hung out and chatted. It's awesome. It's so much better, I feel like, when we have an active chat and people to be able to bring that from, because it was only a few months ago that we were doing this, completely remotely without any live aspect to it. And we didn't get that fan interaction. So really, really appreciate all that. Let me know down in the comments if you want that more advanced video on dual streaming setups, and we'll definitely get on that. And I guess that's it really for this week. We've covered quite a lot. Which platform you should stream to? Is anyone going to be streaming on Twitter in a year's time? Who knows? With all that monetization and the 97% that you can take, I think it's more likely people are going to be streaming on Facebook personally. But that'll do it for me. So I guess that's goodbye from me. I'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Peace.
See you guys. Thanks for watching.